What is up? What is going on, everybody? This week, are we talking about James Bond, or are we talking about a poker movie? Or both? Or neither? We'll figure it out on the other side of the song. Welcome back, everyone, to another new episode of The Threequel. As always, I am one of your three co-hosts, Ethan Klein. Here with me, Brad Miller. Oh. Whoops. Also with me, Mike Duranik.
I think that Brad's off filming something in as a stunt double for Russell Crowe or something. I'm not sure. He was too busy to be here with us today, Ethan.
Well, now that, if you've seen any recent Russell Crowe movies, that has trended into a not nice thing to say. But it used to be a compliment. Now it's a dig if we're still saying. Russell's put on some weight in the last few years. And his movies have gotten considerably worse from when Brad was getting mistaken for him.
Well, okay, all of that is true. However, as this is being released on the Thursday after Halloween, I do think that we can all just acknowledge the fact that Brad doesn't go as Russell Crowe in like Gladiator or some of those movies of that era every year for Halloween is really a missed opportunity. You know, bad job by you, Brad.
It is. When you have something that works for you, there's no reason to change it up. Yeah. Why try to do anything different when you've got one thing that's consistently working? Which is why we stick with the formula we have, because we like it for this show. This week on this show, we are kicking off the month of November with my choice for this month, and it is Casino Royale. Came out in 2006. Very new era for the James Bond franchise. Daniel Craig's first entry as James Bond. And yeah, I was very interested to see what both of you thought of it. It's just going to be me and Mike. I'm taking full blame for this. This is my fault. I flipped the schedule around. We'll see what happens. Brad will be on the show at some point this month. We're just not sure when with our new recording schedule. But we are starting here with Casino Royale. So, Mike, let me ask you, as I always do, what was your first experience with Casino Royale? Was it in the theaters in 2006? Did you catch it later? Were you even really a big James Bond fan and this was something you anticipated? Where were you kind of at back in 2006?
Well, I think for most people of my generation, my real appreciation for James Bond started with a Nintendo 64 video game, right? With the GoldenEye video game, which incidentally, still far better than the movie GoldenEye even. Just a great game. But I was familiar with Bond, and so I knew that they were recasting Bond after Pierce Brosnan was done with his run of three or four movies or whatever it was there in the 90s into the early 2000s. And I remember that there was the big, controversy about Daniel Craig. I think, if I'm not mistaken, remind me on this, like, part of it was that they couldn't believe that they were casting a blonde James Bond, right? Like, yes. That's where we're at is.
Yes.
James Bond had always been tall, dark, and handsome, and now all of a sudden he was going to be, blonde. So I remember that about it, and a friend of mine who's familiar with Ian Fleming's works said, actually, this is one of the better works and the more appreciated works, and so they thought it was going to be pretty good. All that to be said, I'm pretty sure that I saw it in the theater. This would have been in a period of time, and it was a November release, so it's entirely possible that, in fact, 2006, I would have been home maybe from college on winter break or Thanksgiving break when my friends were back in town also, and we would have gone to the cinema to catch it at that point.
Yeah, this was definitely a theater viewing for myself. I grew up watching James Bond movies. My dad is a massive fan of the franchise, very, very specifically Sean Connery. My dad raised me on Sean Connery. So, between that and something like The Untouchables or The Rock, things like that. We were a big Sean Connery household. For me personally, I appreciated and enjoyed the Sean Connery ones. Had a lot of fun with the Pierce Brosnan ones. I think I might have even seen Die Another Day in the theater, which would have been his last entry. And then, we kind of had this little about 5-year break until this. So was very excited. I was 11 years old, so I wasn't in on the controversy. I now, looking back, I know how big of a deal that was. I think probably what would have ended up shocking James Bond fans even more, Martin Campbell in the studio should have said, hold our beer. Not only are we going to change the look of James Bond, this is going to be nothing like a James Bond movie we've ever put out. Because it is vastly different. Mm-hmm. For the first 20 entries,
yeah.
I think this was 20 or 21. It is singularly involved stories. Sure, like Spectre exists back in the old days. It's this, but they're very, just these one-offs, goofy in a lot of ways. It's about the gadgets and all that craziness. And this is what would happen if there was a guy named James Bond in 2006 working for MI6. It's very, very forefront real. I mean, you know, the bad guy is a stockbroker for terrorists, right? He's mm-hmm. not someone that's putting a satellite on the moon to blow up the Earth. Like, it's very, very different. And so as a kid watching it, it ended up playing, I think, even better for me because I got to just kind of come into it blind with, like, the age I was at, that was my dad's James Bond, and now I get this James Bond. I wasn't forced to look at him one specific way. So went into theaters, saw it in 2006, and then went on this journey with Daniel Craig's character that just ended recently, and we'll kind of get into that. So let's play the Rotten Tomatoes game. I have not looked. I don't even remember if it would have. I think you were back in your spot as champion, were you not, or did Brad beat you?
I believe Brad beat me.
Okay.
But he vanquished the seat.
Yes.
Regardless, because he's not here, so I think it's just you and me, and, yeah. and then we'll carry it forward.
I haven't looked yet, so I'll guess first so I can pull it up while you guess, since I was the last one out of it. I'll get this out of the way. I think this is the best James Bond movie that's ever been put to screen. We'll have that conversation, and I remember that while certain fans were kind of put off by the change in tone, I think it had the opposite effect on critics who finally saw, you know, something of a real drama piece kind of in this world. So I'm going to put it at an 88. I think it got rated pretty highly. That led into the rest of this franchise, because I'm still thinking Skyfall was rated even quite higher than that. So I don't think it's the highest of the Daniel Craigs, but I'm going to put it in an 88 and let you kind of go from there.
Well, that's basically right where I was thinking, and so now I've got to decide, do I want the over or the under? I do remember this being extremely well-received by critics, probably even more so than fans, so I imagine that where I'm going to put this, the fan score is going to come in lower, but I will take the over on it. I'll go 89, and we'll see what we got. So tell me, where are we at?
Well, we are at an audience score of 90, so it's still what even people... Even with the pushback, people were still blown away by what they saw. And the critics, Mike, you're going to win. It's at a 94%. This movie is... I mean, that's one of the higher that we've ever done. Once you get into that 94, 95 range, you're talking the upper echelon of greatness as far as what this scale could be on. And I was incorrect. This is the highest rated. Skyfall is at a 92. So this, I mean, they're both... pretty high up there, but let's just have the conversation then. Is Rotten Tomatoes correct? 94, higher than we both kind of guessed it would be, and it's really getting up there. And you know, we talk about, you know, that 94 isn't the same as saying that, you know, I don't know if where Three Billboards Zach hasn't looked either, but if you're saying Three Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, which we'll do later this month, is a 94, it's not equal footing there. But for what this movie is Rotten Tomatoes correct when they're putting it at a 94 and the audience is putting it at a 90?
Well, I think when you're asking, is it a 94 against other James Bond movies or similar movies, right? And I would consider similar movies, right, to be some of the Mission Impossibles, the Jason Bourne movies, things of that ilk. I think that it's fair to have it in the, you know, obviously I was thinking 87, 88, 89, somewhere in there. I think it's fair to have it in the mid-90s. If you're putting it up against, again, all other movies, and this is where we often debate this, right? Brad is not here to say, well, there's no way because it shouldn't be that close to Good Will Hunting, so right. I'll say it for him. But, yeah, ultimately, is 94 right? 94 seems high to me. I would think, you know, based off of the other movies we have reviewed for this podcast, this is probably sitting more in like a mid to upper 80s in my mind. But the critics and the fans disagree, and that's a pretty strong score on both fronts. We haven't had that many that have been both that high and that close.
Yeah, it's a different vein with it being, are we comparing it against James Bond movies, spy movies, action dramas? Because this really is leaning into the action drama. Like, we've done the pure action movies like Top Gun, like The Rock. It's not that far into that category. It is much more dramatic. So, with all of that being said, I think it's the best James Bond movie, and I think the task that they had changing things the way that they did and telling the story that they decided to tell, I will say that it's fair. I will say that it's correct. Maybe more the audience is more correct. Like 94, again, no matter what you're reviewing, when you get into those mid-90s, you're saying that really there's nothing more that could have been changed. You could probably trim 15 to 20 minutes out of this thing. Mm-hmm. It does get a little long. So that'd be where I'd kick it down to a 90. But I say it's still an A for what they did and the effort they gave. So we can get into why I think that too. And we need to start with Daniel Craig, someone I don't think we've talked about on the pod. I mean, I say this all the time, and then all of a sudden we're like, oh, no, we've talked about him 6 times on the podcast, and I just can't remember it. I'm pretty confident that we have not talked at all about Daniel Craig. And this really was a star-making performance for him. He was around. He had been in things. I know I would say prior to this, if I'm looking through his catalog, you know, I look at something like Road to Perdition. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but I have.
Where that's, you know, I think he's fantastic at that. He's evil and slimy and disgusting in that. Very different character than he is when he's James Bond. But that was really the biggest major thing he was in. And he was in some British stuff, comes out of nowhere, gets James Bond. Now, since then, he's bounced around between that and I'm a huge fan of Knives Out and where they're going to go with that. He got put in a big budget movie like Cowboys and Aliens. Not that that did well, but he got put in those kind of movies, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So he's had, his career has just exploded since this came out. I think the definitive question, because this is mostly where his career is at, that I'll ask you, from what you've seen, is he the best person that's ever played James Bond?
Well, it's a tough question in this sense, right? I immediately go to, well, no, Sean Connery is the best person who's ever played James Bond. You know, but then you're really comparing, even though it's James Bond to James Bond, you're comparing apples to oranges, right? Because the movies were just so drastically different back then. What they were trying to do was different. And so to try to truly compare Connery's performance as Bond to, you know, Daniel Craig's, you're comparing two drastically different eras. So I do think when I then compare to more of the recent, and certainly Brosnan as he rebooted the franchise and all that, I think he's better than Pierce Brosnan in the role. But again, who knows what Pierce would have done if the, you know, scripts had been better. And I think that's the other part of this, is that Craig is given a lot more to work with in terms of adding depth to the Bond character in this movie and the ones that have followed than what anybody was ever given before. So it is probably the most impressive performance as a James Bond, even if I would not say he is the most impressive actor to play James Bond.
I think with what they decided to change and the time that it came out, I mean, not that things were where they should be, not that they are today even, but the strides that have been made, like, socially, you know, you could not have just made another Bond movie where he just sleeps with 15 women every movie and degrades the women. Like, yes, he sleeps with women in this franchise, this new franchise that he did, but they had to change it. And I think the setup they gave in this required someone that could put forth a little more depth in their acting. Now, I mean, granted, Sean Connery won an Academy Award. Mm-hmm. But very late in his career, not in the 60s when he was playing James Bond. Right. Pierce Brosnan, I think, is a very accomplished actor, but not to the depths. Pierce Brosnan does a very good job of playing Pierce Brosnan, and he's fantastic in it. So the depths that he had to go to in these 5 films, and specifically here in Casino Royale, I really appreciate that we got to see, you can see the groundwork of what this guy would become as someone who is a misogynist, someone who is a player, things like that, because you see him, like, slowly break down. Like, in the Sean Connery movies, mm-hmm. he would have stopped to make sure he had sex with that first woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, this James Bond, yes, took advantage of her being lonely and drunk, but to get information out of her, and then was nice enough to leave her a bottle of champagne as he went on to continue his job. And then you see, like, he's really, really hurt at the beginning of this movie that she got killed.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes back and sees her body, like, that actually did some damage to him as he's processing, I used this woman to get the information I needed, and she paid for it. Like, you see that pain. And then as the movie goes on, and he falls in love with Vesper, and you know, she dies and does all that. And when it comes to the conclusion of the film, you see an actual journey of, okay, yes, this is a guy that probably would not fall in love again easily. This is someone who would shut that down.
It lays the groundwork for what you see moving forward. But what it did is it offered depth to the character, where before the character was a caricature of whatever it was, right? He was playing to a type. Now you can understand why that type exists.
Right, and I think they did a perfect job, as you know, we talk about Eva Green here too, who gives, acting-wise, I mean, I think the best performance of any quote-unquote Bond girl. Because again, too, I mean, what these girls were given, let's remember, like, Denise Richards played a nuclear physicist whose name was Dr. Christmas, right? Like, these women were not given a lot to work with for 20 films leading into this. And the first scene that she is in, sitting on that train across from him, that scene is almost in the running for my favorite scene of the movie, because it just establishes that she is not some stupid girl to be taken advantage of. In fact, she is just as good at some of these little side things that Bond is. The way they break each other down and they're going back and forth, she does not just roll over and let him have his moment. She takes that moment from him.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, I think she comes across as his equal, right? And so it is different in that sense, that you have got the female character who is absolutely the equal of James Bond, who is going into all of this, into the casino, into this, you know, undercover kind of effort. And it's not just somebody who's coming alongside that he's using.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they did a fantastic job with that. I think she did a great job. I know her from kind of here and there. I've never really known Eva Green to do many things. I don't know if you've seen her in a lot, but as far as a single performance in one movie, she is part of why I say definitively this is the best James Bond movie of all time, because they gave her that, and she gave such a great performance. The other interesting thing behind the camera, then, this is directed by Martin Campbell, who had a previous history in this franchise. They didn't just go and find some random person to do yet another reboot. What you mentioned, what really brought you into the fold of being a fan of James Bond, he directed GoldenEye. Mm. So you get a guy, and he had done a few things, but GoldenEye was kind of his first big, you know, here you go. And he goes, you know, GoldenEye, The Mask of Zorro, which I think is ridiculously fun, mm-hmm. if you're looking for a 90s action movie. Vertical Limit, this, something like Edge of Darkness, which I had a lot of fun with back in the day. So he does these kind of action movies, but I think it's very, very interesting to see. You mentioned GoldenEye. I've seen GoldenEye 2-3 times. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it based, you know, like you said, you're a fan of the game, stuff like that. But you watch that movie, and we see what we talked about with the kind of James Bond that Pierce Brosnan is, and what takes place in that movie. I mean, what's her name? Xena Onatopp? Like, come on. Like, that world.
They were still playing to the exact same tropes that they did in the Connery era or 100%. The Roger Moore era.
And it's a fun movie. It's a fun, bad action movie. You know, Sean Bean. We just talked about him. Then, 11 years later, hey, Martin, we want you to come back, but we're going to do this. I think it's really impressive what he did with GoldenEye, and then to see what gets put to screen here, because they're two incredibly different movies.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And it's, I guess I didn't realize that he had done GoldenEye. As I look through it, out of everything, I probably enjoy The Mask of Zorro maybe the most out of all of his, because it is a lot of fun, yes. And it's really well done. But it's impressive what he was able to do with GoldenEye, and then turning around, same character, but a different script and a different theme, kind of thematic feel. Pretty impressive.
So my next question then, what is the better poker movie, this or Rounders?
No, it's clearly Rounders, 100%. There's no doubt about that.
So, okay, but this is, I made this point.
Well, you knew I was going to go there, but I appreciate, listen, even though you knew I was going there, you still asked the question.
This is what I was talking about, though. Like, how do you make cards interesting? Like, Rounders, there's a lot of other stuff going on. Yeah, Rounders is specifically a poker movie, this isn't. But there's a lot of this movie sitting around a poker table, and because it has to be, because it's they're going off of the source material, and that is what it is. But they do a really, really good job of kind of bringing you into the fold. Like, I've never been so invested in learning what someone's tell is, mm-hmm. and then having them fake that, than what this is. And that's kind of that's the stuff that, the way they describe that, you may have never sat down and played a hand of cards in your life, but they lay the groundwork to how important this is, and I think they do still a really good job of making those scenes very tense for what they are, even if you have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're suggesting that maybe perhaps the fact that the tell wasn't the way that you ate or didn't eat an Oreo was a little more realistic to a poker game?
Well, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, I do think, so, you ask which one more accurately represents poker? I mean, probably this one, right? Because they actually allow you, as you said, to sit in it around the table, to see the full dynamic. You know, Rounders really, there was a lot of poker in it. But really, the intense poker scenes that didn't have a lot going on around it to distract you were the heads-up scenes.
Right.
Which is, I mean, anybody who's played Texas Hold'em can tell you, right? Heads-up is an entirely different game from sitting around the full table. They're the same poker game, but they're entirely different skill sets to be good at them. So, yeah, it's a really well done poker movie from that standpoint. I just think Rounders is more fun, but
and I think what's interesting is you're taking a franchise that for 20 movies the major set pieces have been in space or in an underwater bunker in a volcano, like these crazy elaborate things, and this is simply James Bond needs to beat someone in poker so that they can avoid someone financing the next 9/11. Right? I think they even mentioned that. And to go into, again, this is so much more of a character study than it is just a pure action movie, which is part of why I picked it, because it's more interesting to talk about after he loses, because whoever it was, she, I guess it ended up being her. I guess we can talk about that. She gave away that he knew the tell, right? Like, it would have had to have been her.
Right.
And won't give him the money to buy back in. And they have the conversation about, this is just your ego talking now. This has nothing to do with you doing the right thing. And he like gives his little speech, but it is his ego. Because if it wasn't his ego, because when he goes back and then gets the money from the other guy, he says, like, he tells him, like, if you win, we get to bring him. So it's not about, like, I'm doing this for my country or whatever.
Right.
Again, he just got a pretty big bruise, and he wants to even that out. So it is about his ego. It is this guy needing to learn ways to check himself because he thinks he's invincible. He thinks he's perfect and he's not. And while, you know, Vesper ends up not being a great person in her own right, I mean, she had her reasons to do what she did. Just this back and forth constantly through this whole movie, this check and recheck, I thought was really interesting. And I ended up, at the end of the day, I don't want the James Bond franchise to do this again because we had... So the last one just came out in 21. So we had 15 years that they only came out with 5 movies. It was one very, very long story. I don't know if you kept up. Have you seen all the Daniel Craig ones?
I don't believe that. I certainly haven't seen the most recent one. Okay. I think that I saw Skyfall. I'm pretty sure I saw Skyfall and maybe one of the others.
So it went, I mean, his movies, it was a ping pong. I think this, like I said, I've spoken how great I think this one is. Quantum of Solace sucks. Skyfall is great. Spectre's not that good. No Time to Die was a really good way to end. Which, I mean, 3 out of 5, that's, you know, whatever. But it is one very long story from Casino Royale all the way to the end. Which is fine, it's great, and it tells a good story, and, you know, he had his moment. But I think I would prefer when they recast, they've said that they're looking for someone in their late 30s, maybe 40, to play James Bond for 10 years. And they're going back to individual stories, things like that. Which I think, it's weird that I'm speaking so highly of this movie, but I do think that's how the franchise should be. Because I think 15 years to tell one story ended up kind of killing the momentum.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing is, so I try to think of all of these things in the context of the MCU, right? Mm-hmm. When did Iron Man come out?
2008.
So this predates that, but it almost felt like, again, what you've seen with all this stuff, it all has to come together. It can't be independent. All the movies have to tie together.
Right.
So maybe they were even a little ahead of their time on that, but it just didn't execute as well because you're talking about one character who's your through line and not a universe of characters.
And part of it, too, I mean, I know, like, between COVID and things like that obviously set everybody's timelines off, but I just think it would be served better moving forward. I think they did a good job here starting this, and then the inconsistencies also hurt it as well. Let's just keep it rolling. We can just talk favorite scene and kind of see where we're going with this.
Yeah.
What was your favorite scene of Casino Royale, Mike?
Well, I mean, the easiest thing for me to go with is the first real poker scene around the table. I think, again, it is well done as a poker movie, and I do enjoy poker, and so I like that. But I will give the nod in terms of, I think, the best acted scene. You alluded to it earlier, and I think that you're absolutely right. The scene on the train as they're heading in to the Monte Carlo, as they're heading into, you know, Casino Royale, I should say, as they're heading that direction, it's just extremely well acted, and you're seeing two equals that are throwing dialogue back at each other. Their nonverbals are exceptional in that scene. And it shows you a different Bond than you have seen before. I think that's what makes it so so intriguing. So that would be my favorite scene.
It's wild to think, and this is kind of where I was saying, like, this movie does get a little long in the tooth. There's a distinct point, and I think it's that train scene that you just picked, that you could argue this is two different movies,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we haven't even mentioned it yet. Because we've been focused on the latter half of this, where it is, you know, the more in-depth stuff between him and her. There's three huge set pieces before we even get to that train. Mm-hmm. Like, we have the opening that every James Bond film has. We have him in Africa, I think, is where he's chasing that guy through. Yes. Somewhere in Africa. Then he comes to America. And then we get to, oh, you're going to go to Monte Carlo and playing the casino. Like, that's an hour and like 10 minutes, I think, before Vesper's even on screen. I mean, you easily could have, if you would have filled in some more stuff and extended it, that airport chase, which is fantastic.
Yes.
That could have been the climax of your movie. Like, you literally could have just had like an hour and 40 minute movie that was just about, he became 007, he went to Africa and chased this guy down, and then the climax of the movie was someone trying to bomb an airport.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been its own movie. And we haven't even talked about it because there's so much after it. So I do think, like, if there's a weakest part of this movie, it's just that distinction. Not that that stuff's even bad, because him chasing the guy through Africa, I mean, I remember as a kid, and it was a big thing, they got that free runner or parkour guy, whatever you want to call him. It looks awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Him running through that wall, all that stuff, that looks really cool. The airport scene is fantastically done. That fight with him, and he leaves the bomb on the guy, that stuff. But it does not feel like Casino Royale. I mean, evident to the fact, like, I don't know if you put Jenny through watching this or if Brad made Sarah watch it. I tried to make Tess watch it, and they got to the train, and she's like, is there something about a casino? I was like, yeah, that's coming. She's like, we've been sitting here for over an hour.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean that's going? I was like, well, there's like an hour and a half left.
Well,
like,
I had forgotten until I rewatched it, because I think I probably watched it one time after seeing it in the theater, but it had been a number of years, and I had forgotten how long it took to get to the casino. So that's no joke. If you are waiting just on that, then you're waiting for a very long time.
Yes.
And but at the same time, I think that's what this movie did that other movies didn't do, is it gave a backstory. It helped you to understand a lot of complexity with the character as to why he was the way he was as he sat down in that casino. And yep. I don't know that the movie works as well if they rush through that.
That's true. And because it definitely shows, even then, to the dinner scene they have together before she gets kidnapped and we kind of finally head to the end of this movie,
mm-hmm.
when she said, like, how do you just turn it on and off? It doesn't even bother you that you've killed these people. And his response of, you know, I'd be bad at my job if it did. I think it does.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he shows that more in, like, how he cares about her, because he's shook up after the stairwell fight, like when he goes and he's cleaning himself off and he pours himself an aggressive drink.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a 6-gulp, whatever's in, I'm sure that's not cheap, whatever's in that bottle. Like, I don't care if you are James Bond. That's a very aggressive drink that he just took to just, you know, power through that. But he shook up. Like, he's clearly upset about what has just happened, what's just taken place. I mean, he just had to kill two guys with his bare hands to protect himself and her. Like, that, he is human, and I think that that's part of what makes this so good. The best scene is tough. I think for me it's going to be the scene where he gets poisoned. I think that is the most intense scene, and that's finally where we kind of get a little wink and a nod to the old James Bond, but in a much better way. You know, him going through that and the whole thing, and he passes out and she saves him, which I think is awesome. But then when he stands up And he's like, yep, all right, I'm going to go to a hospital as soon as I'm done playing this hand. And she's like, you're not thinking about going back in there, are you? Oh, I wouldn't dream of it. And then walks in and sits down and, oh, that last hand nearly killed me. Like, yes, it was a nod to the old James Bond. Yes, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it still worked. And that scene is done so very well. It's very intense, him trying to save himself and what he's going through. So I think that's my favorite. The best, I can't pick this because I'm a man and it pains me to watch it, but there's not a better, I don't think there's a better torture scene, which sounds also weird, but he's right. Like, that scene, that's the scene that stands out to me the most, right? That's the scene that, as long as I live, I will never forget. Why are they cutting the seat out of the, oh God, like that. And he's right. Like, all these people do these elaborate, and even that I think is like a little wink, you know, back to the old James Bond, right? Saying this is not, we're not going to hang you over a thing with freaking sharks with freaking laser beams on their freaking heads, right? Like, we're not going to do that. It's just, you're sitting here and I'm just going to kick you in the balls until you tell it. Like, it would work, right? I'd tell, as soon as I'd be like, no, buddy, like, we're fine, we're good.
Yep.
Whatever you need. There's the password, take the money. Like, that is intense.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. As soon as you started saying in that way, yeah, I started chuckling over here. As you saw, it is a great scene.
Yeah, I mean, it just showed, like, James Bond is also not right up there with his response to it, right? I mean, you could just sit there and just keep your mouth shut, but it works, and I think it's really well done. Favorite line?
Yeah, I do have one here, and it's because I wanted to give a little bit of a shout-out to Judi Dench in her role, reprised yet again.
Yeah, right? We didn't even mention it. Fantastic.
As M, and she was at least in the Brosnan ones, right? I don't know.
Yes, it was only the Brosnan ones.
So they kept her cast through this, which was a solid choice. I can't think of that character without thinking of Judi Dench. But it was just very simply, like, as they were having one of their spats, which early in the movie there are many of them, and they are all very entertaining, when he said, you know, I always thought M was randomly assigned initial. I had no idea it stood for, and she just cuts him off, utter one more syllable, and I'll have you killed.
Yes.
And you don't doubt it for a second.
No.
You don't doubt for a second that she is telling him, I don't care that you have your license to kill. I don't care that you're an MI6. I don't care that you're a 00. You're treading on thin ice, my friend, and I have the power. You'll be done.
Well, and I think... She gives a great performance. Because she dies in Sky... I guess, spoiler alert for Skyfall's even a 10-year-old movie. She dies in Skyfall, and they replace her with Ralph Fiennes, who's also fantastic.
Yeah.
But the performance she gives in each one is great. And there's even, in the scene that I mentioned when he's dying, part of what makes that scene great, her response, you can tell, I do believe everything she said in that scene, but also there's some connection she has to James. Because her quick response to him... when he says he got poison, it's someone she cares about. Like, it, and in that moment, you see it as, you know, this is my handpicked guy. I've watched him kind of go through. I put him in this spot, and now, like, I might have to listen to him die. Like, she gives a really, really good performance in that. And I mean, in Skyfall, she darn near should have gotten nominated for Skyfall. What she goes through with both of those guys is really good.
So has eight Bond movies that she played the role of M in.
So, all five Brosnan and then...
The three.
Three of these.
Yeah, very, very good, for sure.
Yeah. My favorite line, it's simple, it's quick, but again, it's one of those ones that I just remember. And I think... if nothing else happened in this movie, and this was the only character development we had of James Bond moving forward into why he is James Bond, I think it's perfect. And it's one of the last things he says when he's on the phone with M. And, you know, he said that she left her phone behind, and she knew you were you, which is a great line. And she said, well, just come back. We need you. And there's a little pause, and unless you need more time. And he just, why would I need more time? The job's done. The bitch is dead. Which is a lie. Like, I mean, and again, the great performance he gives when he's trying to get that elevator open and save her, even though she doesn't want to be saved, and to do that, and even the anger that he had at the beginning of that action scene where the guy threatens to kill her and he says, I'll do that. Right? Like, he wants to be this tough. He wants to believe himself when he says, I don't need time. The bitch is dead. But you even see it on his face, the performance he gives. I think that's the best moment of just acting that he has in the entire movie, maybe in the entire five movies he was as Bond. Maybe the final scene of the last one was pretty good. But it's really, really good how he does that. And you see, going back to even like, I don't have any armor, you've stripped it of me. That's the most honest moment he has in the movie, because it's true, right? Like, this is the first time he's actually, he doesn't have it. That's why it hurts so much, and he's not someone that's supposed to be allowed to be hurt. And he's trying to put on that face for M. She doesn't believe it, he doesn't believe it, but he's got to say that anyway. So I think that's really, really well done that they threw that in there. I don't take it as him being, you know, callous toward a woman or anything like that. He's hurt, and he needs to lie to himself to move forward, and I think that's why it's the best.
I agree. I think that is him. Again, as you mentioned, this is a transformation of someone from getting their license to kill and moving into this role to becoming what you see in not just the later movies of this series, but the Bond that we all know, right? He is calloused. He is hardened to the world. I think that that was him telling himself, this is the way it's going to have to be if I'm going to continue doing this. It doesn't mean that he actually truly felt that way. So,
yeah, absolutely. So I think that will do it. That is our conversation of Casino Royale, my pick for the month of November. Next week, it was your pick, right?
I believe so, yeah. So
Mike picked Creed. Ryan Coogler directing, getting us back into the Rocky franchise in a very, very different way. Sylvester Stallone was back, but got Michael B. Jordan. Very new take on that franchise. Really a new take on those movies as a whole. But we'll get into that next week. This was Casino Royale. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Other than that, guys, for Mike and even for Brad, I'm Ethan, and we'll see you next time.